Okay. So, today's lecture, well, actually I realized after my last lecture, thanks to Dan, that my present lecture was today and not tomorrow. My calendar had not been actualized on my computer. So, I'm here. So, today I continue the discussion of renormalization theory for on the example of phi 4 at one loop, something that I think you have seen already in Dan's lectures, but plan to discuss it more thoroughly, and introduce two the important concept of running coupling constant, beta functions, and renormalization group, and if no time for continue tomorrow. So, phi 4. In D equal 4, for simplicity, I do the calculation in Euclidean for the Euclidean QFT, but that's the same for Minkowski because we have seen the short distance, high energy, ultraviolet divergence are the same, the structure is the same. And we have seen that we want to construct a massless theory, which means that the physical two-point function as a pole at p equals 0. Therefore, the inverse physical two-point function, namely the irreducible two-point function, has a zeros at p equals 0. Which means that the irreducible two-point function at p equals 0 is fixed to be equal to 0. Okay. That's both for simplicity and because the massless theory has an important property of scale invariance, which is very important when discussing renormalization theory. Okay, so we have seen that we know that we start from an action. We have seen that in order to quantize the theory at one loop, which means first order in the coupling constant, we have to use in the path integral, but you can do the same thing in the canonical quantization. You have to take an action which is of the form, I'm in four dimensions. Well, you can keep this, but you have to use here pi squared, a term for the mass in the Lagrangian you use, which is not zero. You have to introduce a counter term if you want to keep this physical condition imposed, enforcing that the theory is massless. Okay. So we have seen that basically the two-point function is, that's because the two-point function is this diagram, which is p squared plus the mass, and if the mass is zero, and then at leading order, that's plus g, there is one half, there is this Feynman diagram, and this Feynman diagram contains a divergence, a short distance divergence is basically proportional to lambda square. If you used a sharp cutoff, that your momenta in your calculation are assumed to be less than some ultraviolet regulator, large energy. Okay. So we have seen that in fact B has to be equal to basically minus G times some constant times lambda squared in order for the physical theory to have a mass zero. Okay, so that's an effect which is rather simple to understand. Now, of course, what's about the interaction? So the phi 4 theory, and we expect, since we know that the phi 4 theory has some ultraviolet singularity, that the coupling constant we have to use in the Lagrangian in order to have a renormalized theory with a given strength of interaction, not to be just naive coupling constant. Okay, so now that's for two-point function, so that's a four-point function. And again, we have to consider the irreducible four-point function, which depends on some momenta, p P4, which is given by this diagram. So you have four momenta, and two, three, four, with, of course, P1 plus P4 equals zero. And this is given in perturbation theory by this diagram. That's an irreducible four-point function. Therefore, the lines are truncated. But this has a physical interpretation because it's that's part of the effective potential, which has a physical interpretation. So that's the leading term, the term coming in classical theory from this. And then, so of course, it has some complete constant G. Well, let's state C here. And then you have a C squared term, which we know from perturbation theory is this diagram. Well, you have four diagrams. You have three diagrams with just the different labeling of the momenta. One, four, two, three. And then, of course, you have higher loop diagram. There is a factor 1/2, which comes from the Wick theorem and the symmetry. And this diagram here, typically, this the amplitude of this diagram will depend if you have 1, 2, 3, 4. It's a function of P1 plus P2, or of minus P3 plus P4. That's the opposite because of the conservation conditions. So this is an important function that I'm going to write. If I write this P, this is the amplitude B of P for this simple diagram, which we have seen is given by Feynman rules as a Feynman integral over the internal momenta going into this loop. And so you can write it, let me write it in a slightly different way. That's 1 over k minus p over 2 squared times k plus p over 2 squared. It's just symmetric if the momenta flow there between this and this. That's equivalent to what I wrote last time. Okay? And we know that at large k, this integral diverge. If k is different from zero, you say if p is different from zero, if the momentum that flows through the diagram is different from zero, you may be worried that there are singularities when k equals minus p over 2 or plus p over 2. But then you have an integral, you have a four-dimensional integral divided by a divergence which is a power of 2 of the momenta. So you have an infrared singularity, but it's not a divergence of the integral. So you have an infrared singularity at k equal plus or minus p, but not a divergence. As long as p is different from zero. So which says that the integral is infrared safe. On shell, when p equals zero, that's a different problem. But that's not what I'm going to discuss. Okay, so we consider that the momentum is p. That's a four momentum. A four momentum is different from zero. And now we know that in divergence here, when k is very large, typically the momentum is p, because then you have d4k over k to the power 4. So you have an ultraviolet divergence. Okay. And we have seen yesterday that if you use, for instance, this sharp cutoff, k larger than lambda, that the divergence has to be a log of lambda, simply because you have integral dk over k, momentum. And we have seen that B of P, in fact, so B of P is a function of P and lambda, the ultraviolet cutoff, the ultraviolet regulator, and that by a dimensional argument, well, you can compute, you discovered that these integrals diverge like 1 over 4 pi squared times log of lambda squared plus some regular term. Okay. So, of course, we need to know a bit more about that. But if you think about such an integral, you have an integral which is a dimensionless integral. You integrate over four momenta with products of two propagators. So this behaves like some momenta to the power 4. So it's a dimensionless integral. So this integral, if it's convergent, should be a pure number with dimension 0 in terms of length of energies. And if it has dimension 0, it cannot be a log of a momentum. I don't know what is a log of a EV or a log of a meter or whatever. It has to be the log of the ratio of two dimensionless quantities, of two quantities, so that it's dimensionless. Well, here we have two momenta, or two energies. We have P, the four momentum, and the cutoff. So it's clear that the only ratio you can form, which is of course Lorentz invariant or Euclidean invariance, which is the square of P, you can only have lambda squared over P squared. You see, here. So we know by this dimensional argument, both the dependence on lambda, the cutoff, and the dependence in P, the momentum, of this integral. Okay, of course, then you have some constant number. And you may say that you might have, you know, some P squared over lambda squared term, subdominant. In fact, you might even have some log of lambda squared over P squared times lambda squared, But these terms are subdominant. They go to zero when lambda goes to infinity. So you can make like this goes to zero when lambda goes to infinity. And this constant here depends on the regularization you have chosen. So you have a constant which depends on the cutoff scheme. Well, essentially, see, for instance, if you choose that k has to be less than 2 lambda, then the log, you had a log of 4, which changes the constant, you see. But we are interested in this term, which contains both the dependence in the cutoff and the dependence in the external momenta. Okay. So, now, that's what we more or less did last time. So now, for normalization. Okay. Remember, this four-point function, this irreducible four-point function, somehow can be considered as a definition of the coupling of the theory, the physical coupling. Because if you perform, well, this is a 5-4 theory. So it's not a real high energy theory, but you can do the same calculation in QED, you have done that. Or you can do that in gauge theories. And so by measuring some scattering process, you get a measurements which gives you information about the nature and the strength of the interaction between two particles. For instance, this is a channel where you have two incoming particles, some scattering, two outgoing particles. How does the information you get from this process? And therefore, if you want to compare to some theoretical calculation to this calculation, you get information about the strength of the interaction and its nature. Okay. So gamma 4 somehow is related to what we are going to call physical coupling. I mean, the physical coupling means the coupling constant, the interaction that you can measure. Okay, but now you have to remember that, in fact, when you perform an interaction, especially in a massless theory, where the particle at rest have zero energy, they have zero mass, so you cannot really measure. You can make, for instance, in QED, you cannot make, where the photon is massless, you cannot make an experiment with photons with momentum zero. Those are photons with zero energy, so they are not there. They are indistinguishable from the vacuum. Okay, so you have to consider process at a given energy scale. You have to consider processes at a given energy scale. So let's consider this function, this irreducible two-point function related to some process of energy where all momenta are pi over some, this energy scale, I'm going to call it mu. Mu, it's a mass, but over the mu. So it's an energy, mass energy scale, or momentum mu. Okay, see, I have particle with energy over the mu, I get out by the conservation of energy, particles with energies over momenta over the mu, mu. Okay, and in order to define what is the physical coupling of your theory, you have to choose a point where you make your experiment. So this energy scale is the energy scale at which you perform your experiment, if you like, or your calculation. And you define what is called the physical or renormalized physical coupling constant. I'm going to call G renormalized, but it means physical, as the value, well, in my scheme, that's just a very naive calculation. In a real process in high energy physics, you have to work more. Of the value of the irreducible four-point function for this momenta, P1 up to P4, for P's over the mu. So you have to choose a point in the space of all your four momenta satisfying. So I'm going to choose, for simplicity, but that's a particular choice, as a renormalization, reference momentum, momenta, I choose, since here the function depends only on P1 plus P2, or P1 plus P3, or P1 plus P4, which was basically the energy transfer in the ST and U channel in energy physics. And for a four-point function, you only have that. Reference momenta, I choose some set such that P1 plus P2, momentum squared, equal P2 plus P3 squared, equal, P1 plus P3, equal P1 plus P4 squared, equal mu squared, my choice of energies. Okay, so that's just a choice. You can make others, and they are going to be physically related, of course, because we are considering the same theory. And so I define, this is a definition of my renormalized coupling. Here is, by definition, my renormalized coupling, or physical coupling constant, at energy mu with this reference momenta. Okay, and you are going to compare what's going on between different choice later on. Okay, so for simplicity, I choose this one. Well, you may ask, p squared plus m squared, I choose it to be positive, which means that they are in, this is a choice of momenta, which is in the Euclidean region of momenta. Okay, this is, we are going in the Euclidean momenta region. While in high energy physics, you prefer to make a choice of energy, physical energies, so a choice of momenta in the Minkowski region where p squared is negative with my choice of metric, minus, plus, plus, plus. But that's not a problem. That's not a problem for the calculation. And once you have results for a choice of momenta, you can choose your chance of momenta and by some weak rotation on the momenta, you can go from the Euclidean domain to the Minkowski domain. So it's not a problem. Not a problem because of analyticity of the four-point function. And also, it's a choice of reference three momenta, which makes sense in statistical mechanics, where these problems is related to the study of critical phenomena. Okay, so I choose this, but for simplicity. And then, of course, then all the p's in those four diagrams are just then mu. So my definition, my choice, means that I define what is my renormalized coupling as gamma 4 for this choice of momenta. Let me call them reference momenta or zero reference, etc. For my pi, my choice of reference momenta. Okay. Well, my perturbative calculation, that's the calculation. So this is just going to be C. That's a parameter I have to adjust in my action, my functional integral. And then I get minus C squared. Well, the leading divergence here gives the same because all the sum of pi plus pg are the same here in the three channel. So I get a 3 half, half the symmetry factor, three, there are three channels. And then I get the 1/4 pi log of lambda squared divided, log of lambda squared divided by mu squared. Okay, plus higher order terms in C squared. Okay, and you see that if I invert this equation, this tells me that if I want to construct a theory with this effective renormalized coupling at the energy scales mu, the C that I have to adjust in my functional integral or in my canonical quantization procedure, because that's equivalent, has to be not the physical coupling I'm interested in, but you just invert. So, and I'm doing perturbation theory, so C has to be first equal to GR, but then plus GR squared, 3/2, 1/4 pi, and I'm sorry, this is a typo, this is 1/5 pi squared, log of lambda squared divided by mu squared, and I neglect the constant here. I assume it's zero. Plus higher order terms in GR. Okay. So you see that this is a coupling constant counter term. That you have to introduce in your action in order to have something which is finite. Okay, so this is mass renormalization, coupling constant renormalization. Okay, and now, once you have performed that, you can compute all the four-point functions for different momenta, because you know what the expression is. The expression is this. It's log of lambda squared divided by the p's. So once you have done this coupling constant renormalization, you can compute the four-point function for your renormalized theory. So let me put an R for any p i's different from this condition, because they are given by this expression where you replace C by the expression of C in terms of your renormalized coupling constant that you kept finite. And of course, you are going to check that the log of lambda squared divided by p squared here is the lambda squared is cancelled by lambda squared of p squared. So what you get now is that this is g renormalized minus g renormalized squared times 1 over 4 pi squared. One half here, and then you get this amplitudes minus the mass the coupling constant counter term. So you are going to find log of mu squared divided by p1 plus p2 squared plus the log of mu squared divided by p1 plus p3 squared plus the log of mu squared divided by p1 plus p4 squared plus term of order g renormalized, well, not squared, but of course cube. Okay, so you get this choice of coupling constant in your Lagrangian in the path integral suffices is enough to make all four-point functions finite, ultraviolet finite, for all momenta, at one loop. So for the one loop means all second order, no, at one loop, which means first subleading order or first semi-classical order if you want, first non-classical order in GR. So these are what are called the renormalized four-point function of my theory expressed as a function of the renormalized coupling constant. Okay. So now remember that what we did yesterday was to show that for the two-point function, the two-point function for a massless theory then you have just one momentum, P minus P. Classically, it's P squared. And the fact that we have simple this diagram which doesn't depend on P means that at first order in GR, well, you have something which turns out to be zero. But that's okay. It could have been non-zero. So we have both, I'm sorry, that's not a two-point function. So with this renormalization, both of the mass and of the coupling constant, you get that with this choice of action, and now we see given by this, the two-point function, the four-point function of the theory are finite when the ultraviolet cutoff is taken to infinity. Okay. So you have a theory which is finite in the continuum limit. So this introduction of an ultraviolet cutoff, which was needed in order to construct the theory and being safe in the intermediate step, you can get rid of it and reconstruct the amplitudes, or at least the irreducible point function for the theory in continuum spacetime when lambda goes to infinity. And well, if you want to be careful, you have to check that those four-point functions satisfy the physical conditions, that it satisfies crossing symmetries, that satisfies unitarity, etc. But everything works. Okay, so we get a sensible interacting theory in perturbation theory. So then let's state one last important remark, which is that, of course, what about the higher order reducible function? Let's consider what about the most general n point functions. Well, they are safe because we know that, for instance, the six-point function of the theory is given basically by this triangle diagram. So it's a sum over, I think, 15 diagrams corresponding to having a diagram with an internal loop with six independent external momenta with a constraint P1 plus P6 equals zero, and you get you have the sum of all the commutation by grouping by pairs, those P's. Okay, so you get a four-point function, a six-point function. Now it's going into P1 up to P6 with P1 plus theta plus P6 equals zero. And you know that at classical order, you have no such a term because you have no phi 6 interaction in your theory. So this is a one loop diagram, and it is of order g cube. But you have no g squared term because the theory is just a phi 4 theory. So you can replace g, well, c in your theory by g renormalized to get the leading term. So at leading one loop term, this is going to be given by GR cube. Well, there's going to be a minus some symmetry factor. And then the amplitudes, the sum of our diagrams of the amplitudes associated to this diagram, which depends on, for instance, of which are functions of the P P1 plus P2, P3 plus P4, P5 plus P6, for instance, if this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, plus the other one. Okay, but these diagrams, when you integrate over K, are ultraviolet finite. So you don't need a renormalization for them. For instance, this diagram is of the form 1 integral d4k, and then you have a 1 over k plus some momenta squared, 1 over k plus some other external momenta squared, 1 over k plus some other momenta squared. So this is convergent in large k. This is ultraviolet finite. So obviously, at that level, that's enough. You just needed to renormalize, to make adjustment in your argument, to have the two-point function being finite and the four-point function being finite. So the other point with that are all ultraviolet finite at one loop. So you can call them the endpoint function of the renormalized theory. Okay. So I did that for the irreducible function, but remember that out of the irreducible function, you construct an effective action. You make a Legendre transform. You get the generating function for the connected four-point function. Out of that, you take by the exponential, you get the generating function for all diagram, therefore. So you know from that if I consider the vacuum expectation value of any time ordered product of operator in the Minkowski theorem of phi of x1 up to phi of xn, using this renormalized action, so define integral over d phi e minus s renormalized of phi times phi of x1 phi of xn divided by d phi e minus r renormalized of phi. That's construction in functional integral formalism, but you can parallel it in canonical quantization. You know that those are going to be finite when the cutoff goes to infinity. Of course, at one loop order. I worked only at one loop. Okay. So you have a quantum theory whose all expectation value of products of operator in the vacuum are well defined. And out of that, you can construct all, for instance, you can construct via the LSD construction, all the scattering amplitude for the theory. So you have a ultraviolet finite bona fide quantum field theory expressed in G renormalized. Okay, so that's the process of renormalization. So you can do that for a massive theory. I'm not going to discuss that here. Maybe it's a good time to make a break, because now, after the break, I'm going to discuss the concept of running coupling constant and renormalization group and what are called beta functions for this theory, which is the important physical features that emerge for the requirement that in order to construct a sensible renormalized theory, finite, some feature of the theory emerge which are not present in the classical theory. Okay, so let's make a break and meet in 5 minutes. And I discuss that. So now, There is something which is a bit puzzling, especially when one teaches this to in master course like that. We say that you started with a theory which depends only if it is massless. You try to construct a theory which depends only on the Kubrick constant. And you end up with, in compute, for instance, the four-point function. Well, they depend, of course, on the external momenta. They depend on the renormalized Kubrick constant. But they depend also on a new parameter, which is the mass scale that you have chosen. So apparently, the renormalized theory, the renormalized theory, seems to depend on G, renormalized, and mu, and more generally on your choice of reference momenta. And so does it mean that the renormalized theory has more parameters than parameters you had in the classical theory? What does this mean? Of course not, because what's important in the quantization is the construction are the A, B, and C parameter, which you take to infinity, you see. But there is a relation between GR and mu, because consider a quantum theory where, well, in that case, for instance, C is fixed. Consider a theory where C is fixed, which is lambda fixed. Now you choose C. And then you adjust C when lambda goes to infinity, so that you have a finite limit. Well, so you choose a function C of lambda. Well, so you have a theory with a C of lambda for a large cutoff. And the only things you know is that you have adjusted C with lambda so that the four-point function and the two-point function at low momenta do not depend on lambda. They are finite. They are not of order lambda, they are all of order one. Okay. So of course, in such a theory, you can study this theory with lambda fixed, a given C, by defining the renormalized coupling constant, choosing difference mu. Okay. And if C is fixed, you see that if you change, you fix lambda and you change mu, the renormalized coupling changes. It means that that's normal. The renormalized coupling is defined as the value of the four-point function corresponding to some scattering process at a given momentum scale mu. So in a given theory, this calculation means that if you choose a different momentum scale, the four-point function will depend on the momentum scale because it depends on the momenta. Therefore, the renormalized coupling changes. Well, that's not true in the classical theory, because in the classical theory, the coupling constant is just given by this diagram. So it's the same at, it doesn't depend on the coupling. So it's a quantum effect that comes from the radiative correction. Okay. So in other words, in fact, if you do this, let me do a map in the plane of the two seemingly coefficients, well, the coupling constant, and the energy scale, mu. Well, I have a picture with some strange parameter, so mu, or rather log mu, if you want, if you prefer, log mu. Okay. Well, you see that for the same theory, starting from a given C, for a given mu 1, you have a theory which corresponds to a different gr 1. Well, let's call it mu. But if you consider the same theory with the same C and define your renormalized coupling as a coupling defined at a different energy scale mu prime, well, this clearly states that from this calculation, the quantity that you called renormalized coupling, which is a renormalized coupling at the energy scale mu prime, is different from mu. And here you see that if you increase mu, the log of 1 over mu decreases. So you have to increase gr. In other words, for phi 4, this goes like that. So this is a constant. This is gr prime. But of course, that's the same theory. We are not considering two different theories. We are considering the same renormalized coupling theory, but simply by defining what we call the renormalized coupling in a different way, by measuring some physical process or some physical quantity, here the four-point function, at reference point in energy, momentum, at different point, different energy scale. Okay, so we have the same theory, but this means that the effective coupling constant, the renormalized coupling constant, GR, depends on the reference point in energy. Mu. Okay. By the way, this mu is often called the renormalization scale. Scale, because that's the point at which I define what are my renormalized coupling constants. Okay, so a renormalization procedure depends on the choice of renormalization scale. Okay, and for the same theory, the renormalized coupling constant that you measure or calculate depends on your energy scale. Okay, of course, so mu, you know, measure some, you have some redundancy. You must be precise what, how are defined the quantity you call the renormalized coupling constant and in which you are expanding in your calculation. Okay. Of course, this doesn't mean that the quantum theory doesn't depend on the coupling constant. Because if you choose for a different, the same energy scale, a different GR, then it's very like that. So it's a different theory. Okay. So if G is small, it's a weak coupling theory. If G is large, it's a strongly coupled theory. If G is zero, that's a free theory. Well, it doesn't depend on you because in the free theory, you don't have loop diagrams and you don't require a normalization. But you see, so if you consider a given theory in such, for a given choice of reference energy in order to know what you call or compute as a renormalized theory, you know, different choices of this renormalized theory correspond to some different quantum theory from small coupling, weak coupling to large coupling. Okay. Okay. So, the renormalized coupling depends on the reference frame. And now you may consider how it depends. How does GR on mu? The bare, well, the theory you had in been fixed. So in our case, C lambda being fixed. But then lambda goes to infinity. GR being fixed at a given mu. I'm considering how does GR changes for a physical theory when I change mu. Well, this is contained in this equation. And of course, you can integrate, but you have higher order terms, so it's better to take a differential form. Better take a differential form. Take by comparing how when I score mu by, well, log of mu by a small amount, how this varies. Because if you know that, then you can integrate. You'll get a differential equation, and you can integrate it. That's much better to know just the differential equation for how a quantity varies with some parameter than computing the explicit dependence, which is, in general, for finite variation, more complicated. So make a differential form. So in order to do that, just consider, well, it's contained in this, or in this. But let's start from this equation. You see, I want to compare in this equation how GR varies with compared to mu. C being fixed and lambda being fixed. Well, so I compare GR, which is associated to a given mu, and with a GR prime, is associated to mu prime, which is mu plus delta mu. Okay. Ah, I'm using not a black, a white. Oh, sorry. This is mu prime equals mu plus delta mu. And of course, I'm going to choose that gr prime is gr plus some variation of gr. Because I'm making a small variation. Well, this equation should be this. The left-hand side should be the same for gr and mu, and for gr prime and mu prime. So, well, it's easy. So here I have this, and if I make the variation, I have this delta GR prime. Well, this is something of order, higher order. So I get that. And here I change mu. So you do the calculation. And you get at my order that delta GR is equal to, well, the dependence on mu is in term of order GR squared. So you're going to have GR squared. You have your 3 over 4 pi squared. And you have the variation of the log of lambda squared divided by mu squared. So you get delta mu over mu. And since the sum of the variation of GR and the variation with respect to mu of this is zero, but there is a minus sign, you get this equation. You see. So, integrating, this tells you that this is local. So this is valid here, here, here. So you can integrate that. And if you start from a GR defined and some mu zero, well, better take mu zero here. And you define GR prime is mu zero equal mu zero plus delta mu, GR plus delta R. You get what's the variation, but once you have done that, you can integrate. And you may consider that if you start from a GR defined for a given theory at an energy scale mu zero, you can compare what is the GR of mu for mu different from zero. So here I have a given mu zero and a given GR, and here I have some mu, and I consider what is GR of mu. You see, I know what is the variation for infinitesimal, but once I have that, I know the formula is true for everywhere. So you get that. This equation becomes what is the variation of GR with respect to mu, or respect rather to log of mu. It satisfies the equation mu d mu GR of mu equals 3 over 4 pi squared GR of mu squared. That's the differential equation. And this very important function is called the beta function of GR of mu. Okay. So it tells you how the complete constant along this line vary with the choice of mu for the same theory. So this function is called the beta function. It has been, that's a notation which comes from paper by Simanczyk and some other paper from the 70s. The fact that it's called beta has nothing special. There is nothing, it's just that they wrote some renormalization group equation where there was a function called alpha, another one beta, another gamma, etc. And the most important one turns out to be the beta function, so it's called beta function. That's its name. Okay. And so that's, of course, a one loop. So that's a general definition, which you can show that this makes sense beyond one loop, general definition. This is the form of the beta function at one loop. And since this gentleman is not too sleeping, you ask what's happening at next orders. At higher orders, the theory makes sense. And the beta function makes sense at higher orders. You can compute them. And you can compute that higher order, you have corrections. It's becoming more complicated. But the beta function for the 5-4 theory, for instance, for 5-4, the beta function of G, I am omitting the renormalized, is of the form 3 over 4 pi squared g squared. And then there is some term, etc. And I think that up to now, there are no, the coefficients are known up to order 7 or something like that, some people have computed them. Well, they were motivated by some calculation in critical phenomena. So this is rather easy. This is more difficult, but this can be done. You know, after that, you have to work quite hard. Okay. But the beta function makes sense. It makes sense in perturbation theory at all orders. That's a consequence of theorems on renormalization.
That's for 5/4 or any?
Pardon?
That's for 5/4 or?
That's for any renormalized theory. Well, by definition, a renormalized theory is a theory where these schemes can be proven to be valid at all orders. But I'll come to that later. QED is a renormalized theory. Young-Mills and QCD are renormalized theory. Okay. So this is a calculation at one loop. That's all what we are going to see in this lecture. Okay. So this beta function tells you how the renormalized coupling constant for a given theory vary with the energy scale at which it is defined. Okay, so that's the definition of the beta function. Okay. Now, before discussing a bit the physics for phi to the 4, there is one important point to be defined, and maybe I'll go that, which is from this equation, you can derive the relation. Well, keep that. You can derive the relation for a given theory. Give that. For the renormalized correlation function, like here, the irreducible four-point function. Lambda has disappeared, so if you take the limit lambda goes to zero, the beta function exists. So if you work in a fixed renormalization scheme, so now, fix mu, which means that you work in a definite renormalization scheme, and we do all our calculation for the physics in these schemes. That's a choice. Okay, and that's if you will be studied early and even nowadays papers calculation in QCD, in the standard model, when people do calculation and compare them to what's happening in high energy physics experiments, they say this calculation is done is this scheme of renormalization with this energy scale mass. So in, for instance, in QCD or in truc, you have also called some sort of lambda minimal subtraction scheme or the modified lambda minimal subtraction scheme. The calculation are always, it's always specified in which schemes you do the calculation and with which choice of energy scale you choose, which for QCD, you take an energy scale which is the order of the mass of the hadrons, of course, because that's a natural energy scale for studying QCD. Okay, so you fix mu, that's a choice, and now we know what are in calculation, my one node calculation, what is my, for instance, my four-point function related to some scattering, two-body scattering process? Well, if I'm able later on, you can compute the next order. Now I consider that mu is fixed. But so what I have, if I have a four-point function, for instance, renormalized, which depends on the external momenta, PIs, and of mu. But it depends on and on GR and mu. But you see that the four-point function is something which is dimensionless, it's four dimension. And you see that, so it depends on GR, and it depends only on P divided by mu. In fact, it's a function. This is dimensionless. It's more complicated for other theory where there is a field renormalization, but so it's a function, in fact, of pi divided by mu times gr. It's just dimensional analysis. Okay. It can only depend on the ratio. So if you fix gr, it can only depend on pi over mu. So now you may ask the following physical question. How does the scattering process depend on the energy of the particle? So how does this depend? How does this vary if I change the momenta into some lambda pi? For instance, so if lambda is positive, it means that I'm going to higher energy. Okay. So this means that I want to compare. I want to compare gamma 4 renormalized of pi, which is a function of pi over mu times gr, with gamma 4r of pi times lambda divided by mu gr. Well, by this dimensional analysis, it depends on pi over lambda. So rescaling the momenta amounts to rescale in the opposite way the energy momentum scale. So this is, by definition, the same thing of gamma 4 of r of pi mu prime divided by lambda. Well, let's write it mu prime, and gr with mu prime equal mu divided by my energy rescaling factor. Okay. So it means that I'm, but so, okay. So this means that if I'm interested in this, it's equivalent to the fact that I'm interested in this for the same renormalized coupling, but at a different mu. And here a mu which is smaller. So rescaling the pi, the pi is equivalent to scaling the mu's, okay? But now I know that this is equivalent to compare. Where is that? This is equivalent to some other four-point function of pi, where I have some effective renormalized coupling at the scale mu. You see, So it's equivalent to states that this is g of pi divided by mu with some g effective of lambda. Because I know that all this is equivalent. So again, you can do the calculation to check how, with the energy scale, does this effective coupling constant, or running coupling constant, on the energy of the particles in the process, in this, in such a process, you see. So a theory for momentum at a given energy p is equivalent to, is the same as the energy at momenta rescaled by lambda, but with a different coupling. Just because it depends only on gr and then p over mu, but we know that changing mu amounts to change of gr, therefore changing p amounts to change of gr. Okay? And it's easy to see that this renormalization group equation, if you know the beta function, you know that the beta function equation tells you also how, with the rescaling factor, how lambda d over d lambda or g effective of lambda vary with lambda, it's equivalent to mu. And this is just the beta function of g effective of lambda, the same beta function. So the beta function will tell you how the renormalized coupling varies with the choice of mu for a given theory, tells you how the effective coupling constant at for given rescaling of the energy of the system varies with the energy. So the beta function doesn't govern not only the somehow abstract process of how the renormalized coupling varies for a physical theory, but it tells you something physical. It tells you that how, for given energy, the effective coupling constant you measure in your process varies. So it tells you that how does, if you have some process energies, if you change them to lambda pi, how the, so you start from some g zero, how g effective vary with lambda, which is a physical question. Okay. So this equation will tell you how the effective coupling constants vary with the energy scales, I call renormalization group equation. Of course, you can write such an equation for this gamma as an equation which tells you the relation between the variation of momenta and the variation of the coupling constant. They are called the Callan-Simoncic equation. They are written shortly in my lecture notes, but I won't write them because that's basically a bit of a mathematical, more general reformulation of what I stated. What's important is this equation, the definition of the beta function, and this consequence for the effective coupling constant. Okay. Now, why do we call this renormalization group? Uh, is just state the fact that the transformation of the effective coupling with the energy, or here, is given by the flow of a differential equation. So if you want to compute G from zero to lambda, you integrate the flow of a differential equation. So that's the transformation from G to G effective of lambda is obtained by integrating a flow. A flow equation in the space of coupling. Well, here my space of coupling is just one dimensional, that's this line. And basically, so it's very simple. And basically, the beta function is the vector flow of this. A beta function here. So here, we have a one-dimensional space coupling. And the beta function is just the vector field, here one-dimensional, which generates the flow. But I will maybe in 5 minutes describe a bit more what we can say. Okay, and this means simply that if you make a scale transformation like that, you start from Z0, you make a transformation by factor lambda 1, you get G1, which is G effective of G0 with a factor lambda 1. But then you can make another transformation by your rescaling factor lambda 2, and you get the G2, which is a G effective of G1 and lambda 2. But of course, this is the same thing that G effective of G0 lambda 1 times lambda 2. I've multiplied, then remultiplied. So it thinks that the flow equation in the space of coupling satisfies this equation. If you make a renormalization group transformation by lambda 1, then by lambda 2, it's lambda 1 times lambda 2. So it's called in mathematics a semigroup transformation. Okay. So it reflects this. So now, what can I add before the end of the lecture? Well, let's come back to
the explicit form
for phi to the 4. For phi to the 4, we know the beta function. We computed it explicitly. So where is this beta function? This beta function, well, it might be hidden. So the beta function is just, well, I know it by heart. So for phi to the 4, the beta function as a function of the coupling constant, I'm omitting the renormalized coupling, etc., is just g squared, some factor, 3 over 4 pi squared, and that's it. So if you are interested in computing, for instance, how does g effective of mu vary with mu, I integrate this equation. I write lambda d over d lambda of g of lambda equal g of lambda squared times this coefficient, 3 over 4 pi squared. And that's an equation which is valid if the coupling constant is small, because we know that we have higher order. But if g is small compared to 1, let's say, or compared to 3 over 4 pi squared inverse, that's a good approximation. Well, how? And so my question is, start at lambda equal 1 by g equal g0, some initial condition, and integrate this equation. Well, that's something you are supposed to do. You just write that dg of lambda divided by g squared of lambda equal this 3 over 4 pi squared d of log lambda. You integrate and you get that immediately, that 1 over g of lambda minus 1 over g0 is 3 over 4 pi squared log of lambda. In other words, g of lambda is g0 divided by g0 plus
should it be?
Oh, there is a minus sign, I think, yes.
Maybe 1 over g0 minus 1 over g lambda when you integrate that, because you get a minus.
Oh, yes, there's a, yes. No, you're right, and that's very important. Otherwise, I was in a bad shape. Thank you. Okay, so it means that g of lambda is 1 over g0. So g of lambda is g0 minus. No, I'm sorry, it's 1 minus 3 over 4 pi squared log of lambda. Okay, so that's an approximation. And there is a g, 0. Important. Okay. So that's for phi 4. And the important point is the sign minus here. The sign minus here comes from the fact that the sign here is plus. Here you have a plus sign. If I represent my beta function, I've not shown the beta function, but the beta function for phi to the 4 as a function of g is just a parabola like that, beta of g, with a plus sign. And you see that when you go to large lambda, the numerator decreases. This means that g of lambda increases. So you see that g of lambda increases when lambda grows, the energy. So it means that for phi to the 4, the energy, the effective coupling is stronger at high energy and smaller, weaker, if we want the interaction, weaker at low energies. That's because there is a plus sign. And this theory, you see that it means that at low energy, the effective coupling of the phi 4 theory becomes small. And a coupling which is small means that we can trust perturbation theory. So it means that perturbation theory is safe, is good, if you want, reliable, let's say, is reliable for low energy processes. Okay. That's okay for phi 4 because of the sign of the beta function. Okay. But on the other hand, so it says that the theory is infrared free. The interaction becomes smaller and smaller, so the particle of the theory, the gauge bosons, becomes basically behave like free if they have small energies. Okay, it's free in the infrared regime. But on the other hand, of course, the coupling becomes stronger at high energy. And with this one loop perturbative calculation, you discover that you have a problem Because when lambda is large enough, you have a zero in the denominator. So it means that the effective couplings of lambda becomes infinite when lambda is of the order exponential of 4 pi squared over squared over 3 g0. If I'm not mistaken, yes. Yes. So, of course, if g0 is small, if we start from a perturbatory regime, this is very large, this is a huge number, it's not important for the physics. But still, it means that there is some energy scale, very high, where the couplings becomes very large or infinite, and we have no control on the physics. So it says that on the other hand, well, the contrary of freedom is slavery, let's say. Well, at least in our world. And the theory is very strongly coupled at high energy. And that's a problem, because we don't know how to trust the physics of the theory at high energy. But remember, perturbation theory means we try to control the behavior at energy of the order of lambda. So there is some kind of difficulties, or at least possibly inconsistency with renormalization. At those energy scales. But you see, those energy scales are exponential of 1 over g0. So you can never see them in perturbation theory. So it's a non-perturbative effect. OK. So I'll stop there for phi 4. Let me just mention that for QED that you have studied in QFT1, I think that if you have computed the beta function, I don't remember if Gang did that or did just the calculation, but anyway, in QED, the beta function for, well, the complete constant is a fine structure constant, the squared of the charge of the electron, and the beta function behaves also as plus some coefficient, it must involve some 1 over pi squared, but then some coefficient which involves, for instance, the number of fermions, if you like, etc., plus alpha squared with a plus. So it means that QED is also infrared free and but might have problem at very high energy. And that's what makes the success of QED. And that's what we live in a world, in a nice world, where the photons are free, the electrons interact somehow weakly with the photons, and quantum electrodynamics works extremely well at our energy scales. And you can, most of the construction of QED came out from the fact that when QED was not yet constructed rigorously, people were calculating radiative correction at one, so at first order, one loop effect. Well, they had this problem of renormalization, but once maybe it gave a perfect fit with the experiments. The anomalous momentum of the electron, things like that, it works. So that's because QED is infrared free. And I think up to now, one can compute perturbative calculation in QED up to some very high order and compare them to results of cold atom experiments with a number of digits, which is, I think, about 10. which is something incredible. Okay, so I'll stop that, and you will see later on that, of course, for young mean theory, that's the opposite. The beta function has not a plus sign, positive sign, but a minus sign. Okay, so stop there. And tomorrow I'll discuss a bit more renormalization theory, the meaning of what, why it makes sense, and the connection with what is done in statistical physics and some more modern formulation of renormalization group. Okay? Yes?